The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Between the Synapse with Mark Tobin. If you're looking to learn something useful, you've come to the wrong place. But as Belushi once said, it don't cost nothing. So, let's get things started. Here's Mark Tobin.
Hey, and welcome to Between the Synapse. Happy 4th of July. It is July 3rd, but might as well be July 4th because this is the beginning of the middle of summer's longest weekend. And we're going to celebrate the 4th of July here today on Between the Synapse, though not as conventional as perhaps you might expect. I did plan originally to have a 4th of July show where I brought on some people to talk about how to repair America's democracy, what we could do on a bipartisan basis, and kind of throw out the cynicism for a while to discuss some ideas on what can be done, maybe small steps at first, in order to get us out of this political gully in which we've been sitting for so many years. However, I called a couple of the kind of bipartisan groups in Washington and asked them to send representatives to be on the show this week. I didn't really care who they sent. It could be an intern. It you know, didn't really matter. But they were apparently too busy this week, 4th of July vacation. So I decided to take another route for today's show and return to my cynical roots. And so today's 4th of July celebration is entitled An Airing of Grievances. This is a nod to Seinfeld's Festivus holiday because I got a problem with you people. And so we'll be airing grievances a little bit later on. If you have grievances, whether personal or about our country or about anything, really, please call into the show and share them with us at 866-472-5787. That's 866-472-5787. Please call in and share your grievances to celebrate the 4th of July. But all is not bad. Actually, there is some very, very good news that came out today in terms of the unemployment rate. It fell to 6.1%. The unemployment rate came out today because of the holiday, so it came out on Thursday. It's the lowest rate since September 2008. For those of you who recall, that was the month that Lehman Brothers imploded, and the economic catastrophe, which initiated the global financial crisis, began in earnest. There were 288,000 jobs that employers added to their payrolls last month, and that was better than the 215 large that economists had predicted. Over the past year alone, employers have added almost 2.5 million jobs, and that's the most in 8 years. And just to provide a little bit of historical perspective, back in, let's just pick a year. So January 2008, the unemployment rate was at 5%. That was a few months before the proverbial shit hit the fan. Then during the Bush administration from, January, 2001 to say January 2007, the unemployment was in the fours. It went up to the high fives for a bit in 03, 04, 05, but mostly it was in the fours and fives. The lowest rate we'd seen was during the Clinton administration, and that was in 98. It was at 4.6, 99, 4.3, 2000, that is one of the lowest numbers we've ever had. It was at 4%, and then started to climb in 01 to 4.2, and as previously mentioned, 5.7, and stayed up in the fives until it dipped a little bit in 06, 07. So this is very good news, and I think it's something that we should take note of, given that we are celebrating the 4th of July. It has taken us an incredibly long time, longer than I think anyone predicted, and I think that longer than most people conceptualized in order to get back to this number. Unemployment numbers are only part of the economy. It doesn't mean that everything is hunky-dory. It doesn't mean that our future is secured, but it is a benchmark and something that we should look at and something that we should figure out how we got there, how we're going to stay on this continuum in order to get this number down even lower and moving our economy further. So we should celebrate that we finally got back to this pre-recession number and as we celebrate the 4th of July. Now, a couple in-house matters. First of all, I want to congratulate my producer, Winston Price, on the birth of his new son. I believe his son is a little over a week old. It's incredible because his son already has a brown belt in Taekwondo. He's quite a prodigy. So congratulations, Winston, on the birth of your son. I want to also urge you guys to check out my blog, BetweenTheSynapse.com. Particularly, there's a poll, and you can fill it out and let everyone know what your plans are for the 4th of July. There are some interesting choices. Some are more basic, and some are a little bit more far-fetched. But please, go to the website and fill that out, and let us know what you're up to. You can also check out some more recent articles that have been posted there. You can also find out which talk show host recently found out that she had a Nazi past. That will be posted on my blog as well. If you haven't had enough of the San Antonio Spurs, there are more videos posted. And you can also find information on what's going on in Iraq. There's also, this was something that had been circulating for a while, for a couple of years, but I found it and put it on the blog. It's video of a little puppy, and this kid must be, I don't know, 10, 12 years old, is teaching the puppy how to howl, and it's the puppy is clearly adorable. But what is even more, I think, meaningful from this video is the look on the kid's face when the puppy finally reacts and does actually howl. And the kid is just sort of beaming. And if you look under the title of it's proof that every kid needs a dog, maybe a cat, I guess, but definitely a dog, if that is not proof enough as to the importance of having a pet from a young age, I don't know what else is. So check it out, BetweenTheSynapse.com. And if you want to call the show and air your grievance, please give me a call at 866-472-5787. Now, I said that the airing of grievances, you know, obviously for those of you who watch Seinfeld, comes from the holiday of Festivus. Which is you know, by the way, when I wrote down Festivus on my sheet here, and I noticed that it said it was misspelled, and I thought I spelled it right, but I checked that out anyway, and it was not in spell check. And I do believe that Festivus has reached a point that it should be an official word. So I'm going to look into that and see if, in fact, Webster's or whoever does the dictionaries is going to start to recognize Festivus as an official word, or whether this was just a Microsoft issue. Be that as it may, the airing of grievances. There are as I said, I got a lot of issues with you people. Not people individually, really, but things going on in the world. And let me start in the Middle East. And let me start with Iraq in particular. There have been a number of articles, there have been a lot of talking heads on TV who have been discussing the topic of who lost the Middle East, who's to blame, is it the Bush administration, is it Obama, how did we get here, is it something that we can save, but we are a country that if we're going to talk about anything, we most enjoy talking about who we're going to blame for something. And then we'll talk about that ad nauseum. And oftentimes in that discussion, it becomes difficult to really understand the depth of the issues that we're facing, because they get simplified into a realm of politics in order to use it in the next election or to use it in a fight for a piece of legislation or whatever. And so... It kind of ruins the discourse, and we've talked about that here on the show before. So I just wanted to talk for a second about how I see Iraq, and I've had these conversations with some people offline, and just wanted to share my thoughts. So first of all, the easy answer, but I do think it is true, is that there is plenty of blame to go around about who we can fault in terms of the current outcome we have in Iraq. Whether or not you supported the initial foray into Iraq, which clearly that was executed with almost near perfection, the biggest issue that I had with the Bush administration was their naivete at what they expected. And they, reading, books and listening to interviews that have come out, since, there appears to have been a real sense that they expected that the initial war would be the easy part and that everything would just sort of fall into place, that because people were so tired of having Saddam Hussein as the dictator, they would relish the idea of democracy, despite all the differences that between the Sunnis and the Shias, and everything else that goes on in this country, which was cobbled together after World War I, that people would just say, "Oh, this is great. We're going to have a beautiful country now," and it would be easy for us. We'd be there for a little while, and then we'd leave, we'd train the soldiers, and so on and so forth. That naivete led to so many bad decisions with regard to how we approached the aftermath of the invasion. And, obviously hindsight is 20/20. But if, forget about, whether or not there were WMDs and getting into the issue of whether they lied or not. That's a subject for another day. But to me, the biggest issue was that the Bush administration was not prepared in any fashion for what was required to develop a country to be successful once we left. And that lack of thoughtfulness, failing to set the ground, has led to all these issues. However, that doesn't excuse the current administration. And I'm going to talk about where I see Obama's faults with regard to the current state of Iraq in just a minute, but we've got to take a break, and we will do that. So stick around. Once again, if you want to air your grievance, when we get back, give me a call at 866-472-5787. I will see you on the other side of the break.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Ooh, are you happy with just accepting and passing along what the media, politicians, and government are feeding you? Or are you positively sick of it? It's time to get the real facts and form your own decisions. It's time to awaken the sleeper within you. Each week, host Dr. Nick Castellano will uncover various viewpoints and topics designed to inform and present the truth. Today's masses are manipulated by media coverage, and we will not become sheeple. Tune in to Awaken the Sleeper, Thursdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Good. You are going global with gas.
Man.
Is that Matt the intern?
That's here. Look, I made this show.
Dude, you totally made it, man. You were doing the Big Brother tryout today.
All right, all right, all right. Kevin.
Yeah, go ahead, Matt.
All right, let's play Drug Code.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech? Drug school.
Yeah. Are we going to play porno music or not?
This program contains sexually explicit dialogue. Discretion is advised.
Live every Saturday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the VoiceAmerica.com Variety Channel. Going global with gas. Man.
How the hell do they know that I got gas?
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Between the Synapse with your host, Mark Tobin. If you want in on this week's discussion, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to mbt@betweenthesynapse.com or on Twitter at @BetweenTSynapse. Now, back to the show.
Hey, welcome back to Between the Synapse. 4th of July celebration, an airing of grievances. Call 866-472-5787. To air yours. Before the break, I was talking about Iraq and my kind of 2-minute observations of what went wrong. And before the break, I was talking about the overriding issue with the Bush administration's approach to Iraq. And I said that I was going to be talking about the Obama administration's issues. And with Obama, I mean, look, just like the issues of the economy, this was a thing that he inherited, and he had to deal with the cards he was dealt. Nonetheless, that doesn't take him off the hook. Particularly the longer that you move away from the other administration, the more responsibility imbues to the current administration. The overriding issue, I could spend a long time on this subject, and we will probably on another show down the road. But the overriding issue that I have with Obama approach to Iraq is also my concern with his approach to the region in general, and that is really twofold. Number one, he doesn't, whether he recognizes and fails to act or doesn't recognize at all, but the perception of power in the Middle East is sacrosanct. And when you're unable to be in the position to have that upper hand, to be in the position of power in the Middle East, you don't have the respect and you're not able to accomplish your goals. And I'm not necessarily talking about power from the perspective of bombing a country using our military. Power can be exercised in a number of ways. Obama reached out starting in with his speech in Cairo right after he took office. And he wanted to take a kind of a diametric approach to the Bush administration and particularly its outreach to Arab countries and to Islamic nations in general. And not that there was anything wrong with that as a matter of kind of human interaction, but it did send the wrong message, and that message just seemed to be reiterated at a number of key points, and most effectively reiterated in a negative way when we were about to engage in Syria, and the Russians intervened, and we didn't, and Syria probably still has some sort of chemical capability, but that really was a sign to all involved in this region that the United States was not prepared to take action. Whether that was a wrong perception or right perception, it didn't matter. And it just seems to me, in observing, that whether President Obama doesn't understand the importance of that perception, or whether he understands it and is either unwilling or unable to do what's necessary to create instances of undoing that kind of perception, is unclear to me. But that is a very, very serious issue with how we can impact events in the Middle East. Some people say, why is it our job to impact events in the Middle East? Well, if there's kind of a saying that if you ignore the Middle East will come to you. And that's what's happening. We have to engage the Middle East, and we've got to be involved, because if not, the consequences are going to be far worse than if we try to isolate ourselves from events. The second issue that I have, overriding issue with Obama administration's approach, has been the focus of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict as the center point of resolving the issues in the Middle East. And there is nothing that could be further from the truth as to what are the issues that need to be resolved in the Middle East. And so much time, so much effort, so much political capital was spent on trying to resolve this conflict without success. And also, I said at the beginning that the chances of them reaching any sort of success were nominal to begin with. That not only did that alter the perception that I discussed just a minute ago, but it also has set back the issues between the Palestinians and the Israelis. Because any time that there's raised hopes between the Israelis and Palestinians, and those hopes are dashed, it becomes one step forward, and not just two steps back, but oftentimes two, three, four, five steps back. And those steps going backward usually end up with people dying. And that's something that we're seeing now. We'll be talking about some of these issues on a couple shows down the road, which I'll be announcing, so stay tuned if this is of interest to you. Right now, I've got a caller on hold. It's someone I believe has called before. Les, are you on the line?
I'm here.
Hey, how's your summer?
Summer's hot. How's your summer?
It's about the same, but we haven't seen triple digits, so I'm not complaining.
Well, that's good.
So what's your grievance?
Well, I guess I'm going to, I don't know if you wanted to drop Iraq, but I think you make some interesting points. I agree that it was a dubious decision for Bush, for us to be there in the first place. I think it creates... to the extent it creates responsibility on our part for what's going on there now, I don't know what that extent is, but I think it does create some responsibility. I think, you pointed out, Obama has made some missteps too. My recollection is that in 2011, President Obama declared Iraq stable. I think they had just had some successful elections. He declared it a peaceful, stable, democratic state. And maybe it was at the time, but it appears to not be anymore. I think President Obama has made some pretty major missteps in the Middle East as a whole, Egypt, Syria. You know, withdrawing troops in Iraq, we were going to have to withdraw troops sometime, I guess. I don't know. Probably there are people arguing that we should always have troops there. I think now we have 800 advisors over there. So, like everything involving the Middle East, there are no easy answers, and it seems like once you dip your toe in that, you know, in that place, you're not going to just have your toe in. You're going to get swallowed up whole.
Yeah, look, there's no such thing. You're absolutely right. You're either in or you're out in the Middle East. There's no going in the shallow waters because there ain't no shallow waters. You jump in and you're in the deep end from the beginning. And look, you know, I agree with you on generally speaking in terms of some of the points you've been making. The one point I will add from the perspective of the hand that Obama was dealt, and I do, people raise this argument in support of the administration. I think it holds some water, but it does not excuse a lot of the decisions. And you know, that is war fatigue. In that we are a country, particularly in the midst of this financial crisis, we spent upwards of $1 trillion, fighting two wars for multiple years, two wars at the same time, both of which were lasting longer than World War II, one lasting longer than Vietnam, and there was certainly the fatigue in terms of budget, in terms of political capital, in terms of a nation willing to have its servicemen at risk without having a benefit that seemed to be apparent. Now, that only goes so far. And that's why when I talk about my issues with the Obama administration, I really focus on his overall approach, because I do think that despite the war fatigue, that had he gone in understanding how the Middle East thinks and understanding that I may be the best president in the United States history, I may be the best negotiator the world has ever seen, but I still don't have the power to bring about peace in the Middle East by myself. Well,
let me ask you something, Mark. I know you are, I know that you lean to the left side of the political spectrum. Do you think, A, Obama's Middle East foreign policy as a whole has been successful, and B, do you think Obama as a president has been successful?
All right, well, good questions, and let me answer them this way. Number one, I lean to the left. I'm kind of balanced because I think on foreign policy, most people would say I lean to the right, and on domestic issues, I probably, am center, or on social issues, I probably do lean to the left. So it just kind of depends on what we're talking about. But in terms of his foreign policy, particularly when it comes to the Middle East, no, I don't believe that he's been successful. And that is successful with the understanding of what I just talked about, meaning taking what he inherited. Understanding that he didn't just come in with a clean slate, understanding that the issues that were created were already there, that he had to deal with the cards that he was dealt. Playing his hand out, you know, he still did not play those cards nearly as well as he could or should have done. So when it comes to Middle East foreign policy, no, I don't. At this point, once again, there's still time. I don't deem his actions and policies to be positive in the Middle East. As a president, you know, like most presidents, there's a mixture. If I were to be asked, if one of those polling companies called me on the phone, and I actually took the call and said, you know, I'm busy, don't bother me, and they said, you know, do you approve or disapprove of, you know, President Obama, I would still say that I approve. You know, in terms of, you know, a lot of the other issues, you know, domestically, you know, I still think that he's done, you know, a decent job. Could he have done a better job on a lot of issues? Absolutely. But, you know, a lot of the reason I say that also has to do with the fact in terms of what he is up against. And that is, you know, everything has to be taken in context, right?
Sure.
And he's dealing with a Republican Party that is as radical as really any party in power that we've ever seen. Go ahead.
Well, let me ask you one more thing, and it's a little bit off topic, but I sense that you're about to kick me off the phone, so I want to ask you this because I know you are screwed in politically.
I'm definitely screwed. I don't know about being screwed in politically.
Will Hillary be the nominee, the Democratic nominee?
Well, yeah, I don't think you have to be screwed in politically to say that. And, you know, it's getting closer and closer to the point that if she were to bow out, you know, that you know, it would make it difficult on the Democrats. I you know, it's still unclear what, you know, Biden is going to run, and there are a couple other people.
What about Elizabeth Warren, Senator Pocahontas?
I don't think she would challenge Hillary in a Democratic primary. There would be no benefit to that, you know, could she be waiting on the wings and waiting for Hillary's decision? Maybe. I don't know, but no, I don't see any way that she would openly challenge Hillary in the primary. Would Biden? You know, who knows?
You make a good point that if Hillary is going to bow out, she needs to do it soon, or she is going to leave the party and, you know, sort of behind the eight ball.
Right, right. And we still won't be as bad, you know, the Democratic Party won't be as bad off as the Republican Party. But
I heard you say we.
Yeah, you did. But I corrected myself. But hey, listen, I have a couple questions for you, though, that I want to talk about. Can you stick around for a minute?
I don't answer questions. I just ask.
Yeah, well, if you stick around, we'll figure it out. Can you stick around for a minute?
I can, yeah.
All right. We'll be back on Between the Synapse after this break.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a single parent trying to create the balance between home life and work life? You may be running a successful business, but how are your relationships with your family and children? If you're one of the thousands of people trying to juggle it all, tune in to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood, hosted by Chris Efesiou. Chris is the portrait of the success story. Coming to the U.S. with no language skills, founding and growing several businesses, while raising his daughter from age 7 to adulthood as a single dad. Listen every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Very rarely does our news media spotlight some of the good things that are happening in our world. For more of these good stories and the people that are creating them, tune in to Bread for the Journey with Mariana Cacciatore. Whether these good acts stem from personal tragedy or just a desire to help out and make this a better world in which to live, you'll find inspiration in every week's program. Connect with those that are doing something great for a change. Listen for Bread for the Journey, Saturdays at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, on the Voice America Variety Channel. The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Between the Synapse with your host, Mark Tobin. If you want in on this week's discussion, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to mbt@betweenthesynapse.com or on Twitter at @BetweenTSynapse. Now, back to the show.
All right. Welcome back to Between the Synapse 4th of July celebration. An airing of grievances. Call me with your grievance at 866-472-5787. Talking to my old friend, Les. Les, we were talking about Iraq and Middle East earlier, but I'd like to move on to a couple other topics, if you mind. I've just got a couple questions that I've been percolating, and one of them has nothing to do with the Middle East, but have you ever noticed, like, when you go to a, you know, here in Houston, you know, we've got, we drive everywhere for the most part, and, you know, you always have to park in a parking lot. Have you ever noticed how many people try to back in to their parking space?
Yeah, I have. In fact, I'm guilty of it myself on some occasions.
All right, well, then I can ask you. So why, you know how much harder and longer it is to back into a space than backing out of space?
Well, that's a good point. The obvious reason to back in is because you think it's going to be quicker and easier to get out.
Well, that's right, but are you guys like superheroes and you're going to be getting the call?
you never know when you're going to have to make a quick getaway. Do you think it's easier and quicker for them to back out than to back in?
In most cases, yes. There are some times, like, you know, if you're at a big parking lot for a big event like a game or something, where you know there's going to be a line of cars, and you've got to get into that line, that it is easier to go out head first. I get that. But, like, I was at Starbucks this morning getting my cup before the show, and there were plenty of open spots. You know, and so this guy is backing into the spot, and I couldn't figure out why. And he was, like, you know, struggling to get in between the line. It was, like, taking forever. And so I was starting to think, it's like, you know, it's not that hard to back out of a deal. I mean, you got to look and whatever. So I don't know. I don't know if maybe.
Let me ask you a related question. Do you think people take longer to leave? If you know somebody is waiting for your parking spot in a crowded lot, I've read that there's been studies that have proven that people will actually take longer to leave their parking spot if they know somebody's waiting.
Yeah, I do think, not always, but there have been people that I do think do that. And obviously it annoys the crap out of me when you know. And it's not like I've done anything to them. I'm just waiting. I see them in the car, and I turn my blinker on. I'm not, like, honking or anything like that.
I've actually asked a person as they got in their car to leave and then got back out of their car while their car was still running to make a phone call. I've actually asked them if, you know, are you leaving or not?
Yeah, no, that's fine. And I've sometimes done that where I've seen somebody waiting. I am in my car, and occasionally, you know, I am on the phone, and I'll just say, hey, you know, go on. And then I've had people where I'll say, like, hey, are you getting ready to leave? Are you leaving? And they, like, nod their heads. And so I'm like, okay, great. And then I wait and wait and wait. And then they don't leave. And I'm like, well, why, you know, why did you tell me you were leaving? I don't know if it was a language issue or they were just trying to, you know, be, you know, whatever about it. But we could spend a long time talking about parking etiquette, which is, I think, the subject that we've gone on to. But I do want to also ask you about, you know, did you watch the World Cup? I don't know. Are you a soccer fan?
Not a huge soccer fan. Did not. I watched bits and pieces. I was actually in Europe. I was in Ireland and England when the World Cup started, and of course there was great attention paid to it over there, especially England while England was still alive in the tournament.
That was like 2 days.
Yes, you know, I enjoy the spectacle of it. I'm not a huge fan of the game. I still think it's, you know, kind of boring.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a good thing it's over finally, the World Cup.
It's not over.
Sure it is.
Because the U.S. is out?
Yeah. They just fold it up. It's like the U.S. is out. That's it. I mean, that's how it works. Once the U.S. loses, they say, hey, we don't need to play the rest of it. You know,
I can appreciate that these guys that play are extremely athletic and extremely skilled, and they're in fantastic physical condition. I'm not trying to knock the athletes. I just think the sport, it's not culturally what I grew up with, and I find it hard to get real interested in it. And I really am offended by the flopping. I'm not just making a joke about it. I think it detracts from the game.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And particularly that I did see, actually I didn't see it. I heard it on the radio, and then I saw the highlights, the Mexico-Netherlands game, where Mexico just got, I mean, they just got screwed.
Yeah.
I mean, that, the guy ran over his foot, and, you know, how the referee, you know, called that.
I didn't see that match. I know the Netherlands came from behind at the bitter end to win that.
Well, they scored two late goals, but the last goal was a penalty kick, which, you know, is
right.
You know, the goalie might, I don't know what the percentages are, but they might stop maybe 20% of those or 15% of those kicks. So, you know, it's because a guy like, you know, Netherlands guy tripped over somebody's foot and then pretended to, you know, fall on his head or something.
The one goal or the first goal, and it may have been the only goal that the U.S. scored against Portugal with the kid who had just come into the game. That was an amazing feat. Belgium. Belgium.
Yeah.
The game we lost.
Right.
That was an amazing feat. I mean, I don't know. That's as good of an as athletic a play in any sport as I've ever seen.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. But there hasn't been much discussion from, not that I've been paying tons of attention. But you know, we had a chance to win it in regulation when that guy, you know, I was sort of centered there in the middle, and the guy kind of just sort of tapped it with his foot, mm-hmm. and it went over the net.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the goalie was nowhere near it. I mean, all I had to do was just sort of touch it, and the ball would have gone in. And I don't know what he did exactly, but I don't think it was offsides. It was a little unclear to me what the announcer said. I think he said he was just stretching his arm. I don't know.
That's another thing. The offside rule needs to be changed or clarified.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Here's my two rules that I think need to be changed in sports. One is the offsides rule in soccer. I think it would up the scoring and make it more fun. And number two, I am coming to the conclusion that there's got to be some sort of time limit on pitching and batting in baseball. In the major leagues,
you got to put them on the clock like they do in golf.
I don't really follow golf. How does that work?
Well, I don't know what the numbers are, but if you are slow, if you're playing too slow in a PGA golf tournament, I think you get a warning that you're on the clock, and if you then take too long again, I don't know if it's a penalty stroke or if you can get disqualified, but basically, you know, they need to do more of it. The game is still golf tournaments still move much too slowly, especially just tedious reading of greens and putts. I know there's a lot of money on the line.
That's golf.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. But look, no, baseball, look, the batters take way too many timeouts.
Yeah, and they shouldn't be. You can adjust your gloves one time during an at-bat.
Or whatever you want to. You can adjust whatever. It doesn't, you know. Give the batter one time out. It's kind of hard because, you know, what do you, you know, after the guy hits a foul ball and, you know, he starts to trot out and comes back, whatever. But I think that they're and I'm not sure exactly how you can do it, but there's got to be something. It's just gotten out of control to where, you know, you go to a game and the game starts at 7 and at 9:30, you know, the game's in the sixth inning. That's just, you know, that's not effective.
That's why I always liked Roy Oswalt games for the Astros, because those games were over in 2.5 hours.
Right, right. I mean, I like pitchers that work quickly, and they're usually more successful.
Right.
Anyway, so I don't know. Something's got to be done for the sake of the sport, because I think they're starting to lose people because it does take too long. And I think that is the area where players have really expanded the time. So listen, I want to thank you for calling, but real quick, so what are your plans for the 4th?
Baseball tournament. Well, actually, my wife is picking up my daughters from summer camp, and I'm taking my son to a baseball tournament in Brenham, Texas.
Nice.
And nice. You know what? I haven't spoken to you. I know you're a huge Spurs fan, and I don't think I've spoken to you since the finals, so congratulations on your team.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Thank you. Still, if you checked out my blog, you can see that I am still celebrating. Well, hey, when you're in Brenham, say hello to my aunt and uncle. My dad is from Brenham.
Oh, really? Good.
Yeah.
It's a nice place. It's going to be hot.
Yeah, well, that's why you got the Bluebell ice cream.
Exactly.
To take your mind off of it. All right, so well, that's not part. That wasn't on my poll. I've got on my blog. I've got here. You can answer this though. What are your plans for the 4th of July? Let me just fill this in for you. Fireworks, fireworks, fireworks. Number 2, hitting the beach. Number 3, kids at camp. The 4th of what? Or 4, planning for the zombie apocalypse. Where do you go? What's your choice?
I guess I'm going to have to go with the 3rd one.
Kids at camp. 4th of what? Very good. All right. Well, good luck in the tournament, and thanks again for calling.
Okay, thank you.
All right. We will be back on Between the Synapse in just a couple minutes.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number 1 internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Tired of lackluster results with your marketing? Craving more leads in your business? Tune into the Mojo Marketing Edge with the team behind Mojo Global Marketing, Ira Rosen and Corey Michael Sanchez. Winners of the Marketer of the Year, they will show you how to generate daily leads, build databases of raving fans, and close deals faster than ever before. See what's hot right now and how you can tap into it to generate an endless supply of customers and clients. The Mojo Marketing Edge can be heard every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Want to help make our world a better place, but not sure where to start? Tune into Better Worldians Radio with the creators of the social game on Facebook called A Better World. Join hosts Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel, who will inspire you to make a big difference in small ways. They'll speak to experts, authors, volunteers, and everyday people who are changing the world daily. Better Worldians Radio is heard live every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Variety.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Between the Synapse with your host, Mark Tobin. If you want in on this week's discussion, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to mvt@betweenthesynapse.com or on Twitter at BetweenTSynapse. Now, back to the show.
All right, welcome back to Between the Synapse for the July celebration, the airing of grievances. I want to thank Les for calling in, as usual. So I think I got time to discuss one last grievance. It's something that has been all over the news this week, and that is the Supreme Court decision in Burwell versus Hobby Lobby Stores, Inc. In this decision, the Supreme Court ruled that the a closely held corporation was not required to provide their female employees with no-cost access to contraception as required under rules propagated under the Affordable Care Act because it violated the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. It was a 5-4 decision, including some very scathing dissents. For those of you who don't recall the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, it passed the Senate 97-3 and was signed into law by President Bill Clinton in 1993. And I am pretty sure that it was never meant to be applied in this kind of situation. Look, this is a terrible decision in a number of ways. It was terribly reasoned. It was result-oriented. And it devalues not only the importance of women in the workforce, but it opens the doors for a number of challenges to a number of laws that corporations, for whatever reason, don't want to adhere to. I don't have a lot of time left, so I only want to focus on a couple. And that is the treatment of the corporate entity. The corporation was created in order to provide people protection so they'd be more enabled to go out into the economy and produce in a way that would preserve their individual well-being. It's always been about providing the corporate shield, providing protection under a corporate umbrella. This idea of corporate rights, similar to those which individuals are imbued with under the Constitution, is something that the Supreme Court has only recently begun to provide. It started in the political finance case, where it talked about the ability of corporations to provide additional funds because it violated their political freedoms. And now we have this case. It says that because it's a closely held corporation, not a publicly held corporation, by the way, this is a for-profit corporation, that this corporation has essentially standing in rights under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And my point here is that you can't have it both ways. Either you enjoy the protection that the corporate veil, the corporate entity provides, or you can choose, and people do, and it's you do whatever you want in this country, but you can choose to operate as an individual and sustain your personal beliefs. And that's fine. But you can't pick and choose, you know, one right from this, one right from that. You can be a corporation. You can be an individual. If you want the rights and protection of a corporation, then you can't enjoy the personal constitutional rights of a person. This might be one of the biggest sinkholes that have ever been opened up by the Constitution, and we'll see. This is a company now that provides Viagra, so it looks as though they, while they support you know, older men knocking up younger women who no longer can, you know, be providing with contraception, which brings me to the what I believe is the real reason behind Hobby Lobby's concern with providing contraception, and it's not religious at all. As a matter of fact, it's economic. This is just good old economic interest. And that is, look, with less birth control, that means less kids. Hobby Lobby sells a lot of things that kids use, and art and projects and school and so on. So they want more kids, more art projects, more school supplies. So less birth control, more kids, more profits for Hobby Lobby. And that ultimately was what's that about. I want to thank you for joining us on this 4th of July weekend. I want to thank Les for calling. Thank Voice America team, my engineer Matt the Monk Wiedner, and producer Winston Price. Check out the podcast for this and future shows at BetweenTheSynapse.com under BTS Radio. And also check out Between the Synapse on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening, and see you again next week on Between the Synapse.
Thanks again for joining us this week. Mark Tobin and Between the Synapse will transmit once again next Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. And remember, you never know what lies between the synapse.